Hey guys, how's it going?
What the hell is that?
Huh.
Is that the light rattling? It's like my whole goddamn house is rattling. It's just a plane flying by. Pretty high up there, too. Well, thanks a lot, Southwest Airlines, for rattling my whole cage here, man. Now my cage is all rattled. Hey, I'm Scott. Could you guys even hear that? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Anyway. Well, there was a plane, and it made the room rattle, and there was a lot of noise, and really bad timing at the very start of the show. Anyway, I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. It's libertarian foreign policy, mostly. Isn't that a great slogan? Yeah, it's libertarian foreign policy, mostly. ScottHorton.org is my website. And LibertyRadioNetwork.com is where they keep the Liberty Radio Network. See, it's a radio network. It's all about liberty. LibertyRadioNetwork.com. ScottHorton.org. I keep all my archives there. More than 3,000 of them now. Going back to 2003. No, really. And so if you ever doubt and you think to yourself, okay, Scott Horton, he sounds like he's good on everything, but was he always good on everything? Then you can go back through those archives and you will see that, yes, I always was good on everything. All the proof right there for you in MP3 format at scotthorton.org. And then also you can find the whole show archives there. More and more people signing up for the podcast feed for the whole show archives as well. And then there's my blog, Stress, where mostly I just write about what's coming on the show today. Man, I need to get back into blogging. It's Stress. I don't know what it's going to take. Start blogging at Stress again. Anyway, and then also there's a chat room at scotthorton.org/chat. Oh, good. Number 6 in the chat room says, I couldn't hear anything. Oh, great. So I was going on and on about what you couldn't hear. You couldn't hear that? The goddamn ceiling fan was rattling and the window and other things. I'm not sure what all was rattling in here. Huh. All right. Well, good for you, microphone, for keeping that noise out of yourself there somehow. So, anyway. See, chat rooms are very useful. The chat room is the place where number 6 can tell me, how's my audio? Everything coming through all right? And he can say yay or nay. And, of course, sometimes there will be long-term discussions about El Camino restoration and or who knows what. Israel. That's scotthorton.org/chat. It's an IRC free node chat. But also you can just use a plain old browser window to participate in it. scotthorton.org/chat. Just put in a fake name and a CAPTCHA and you're in there. Good times. All right, good. Also, you can follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. I quit Facebook because they quit showing my posts to anybody. Started trying to extort money out of me just to show the post to the people who all signed up for my post. And so my answer to that was, I quit. So, I'm not really on Facebook anymore. I mean, you can find the old page, but it ain't being updated. But you can find me on Twitter. And I tweet all the time, because I hate lots of stuff. And I only actually hit go on about half of the ones I compose. I'm like, nah, better not. Some of that. A little bit of that. But / Scott Horton Show, at Scott Horton Show there. On Twitter, if you want to follow me. And you know what? This week, I'm continuing my fun drive. I got expenses. Support for this show has always been about a foot wide and a mile deep. Those of you who love it, love it. And the truth is, and this has always been the case since 2004, I got fans all over the world. I got fans in Mongolia. What's up, Mongolians? Seriously. I got fans all across Europe, Australia, Japan, obviously, you know, all the Commonwealth, New Zealand, and all of that, Anglophone countries, and people in the Middle East, and of course all across the United States and Canada and whatever. And, you know, hey, everybody, individually, Greetings, salutations. Thank you very much for being listeners, for supporting the show. And especially for those of you who've just been listening for years and years and years in a row. Like, that's really cool of you, man, that you think that this is quality enough to fit into your life to such a great degree. You know, it's a pretty high compliment. So thank you very much. I'm grateful to all you guys for listening. And if you want to donate and help support the show, you can. And if you go to skullhorn.org/donate, there's places to donate there. If you support with $100 or more, you get a commodity disc. That's a 1 ounce silver round with a QR code on the back. So you get the instant spot price from commoditydiscs.com. They are awesome. And also, you can just sign up for a monthly donation. A lot of people sign up for just $5 a month. Fine with me. Hell yes. I'm as grateful as I can be. And if I can get a whole lot of people to sign up for $5 a month, that's a lot. And if I can get a whole lot of people to sign up for $10 a month or $20 a month, then that's a hell of a lot even better. And there are people who do monthly subscription donations along those lines. But believe me, I'm perfectly happy to accept those $5 a month subscriptions. Those are absolutely great. And they help make the difference in me being able to continue doing this show at all. Believe me, it's like that. So anybody wants to do like that, they can. And hey, what if, say, for example, you're a Bitcoin fanatic and you would like to impress upon me the importance of also being a Bitcoin fanatic? Well, you know, one good way to influence me is to send me Bitcoins. And in fact, well, I ought to open up the program here. It's been a few days since I checked, but somebody sent me a half a freaking Bitcoin the other day. And you know what? I almost didn't even notice or pay attention because I had so many damn windows going on and my phone ringing and all kinds of crazy stuff going on over here. I only just now remembered. I barely even took notice. I restarted the computer since then. I forgot. But I do believe that I've gone up from 3/10 of a Bitcoin I was at like 3/10 of a Bitcoin to quite a bit better than that. I'm opening it up now to see. But anyway, if you want to donate your Bitcoins to me, say, for example, you used to be a Bitcoin fanatic and you've had it with Bitcoins and you would like to just go ahead and get rid of all of the ones that you have, well, you could just go to scotthorton.org. Is that pretty subtle manipulation? Is that working on you? You want to get rid of all your Bitcoins. Give them to me. You're getting sleepy. Go to scotthorton.org/donate and you can find my Bitcoin address there. And that sure would be perfect. If you can think of a way to help me go back to 2009 and do everything I can to mine and buy Bitcoins then and sit on them until, say, last December, please let me know. That would be better than any donation at all. And, you know, if you really want to support this show, what you need to do is sponsor it. Say, for example, if you own a company or if you're a member of some kind of nonprofit group, you know, a respectable one that opposes war, or cops, or something like that, then, I sure would love to have you as a sponsor. Do everything I can to help you promote what you're doing. I'll interview you about what you're doing as well as run of my wonderful custom ads that I do, as you've heard. I hope it's worth it. I know that Darren's Coffee is making some money. Got scotthorton.org, Scott Horton Show listeners are going over there to Darren's Coffee at darrenscoffee.com, and they're buying coffee. Buy more coffee, darrenscoffee.com. Also, I know that at least from time to time, the Future of Freedom Foundation and the Council for the National Interest, both nonprofit organizations, they get a little bit of support from my listeners as well, who find out about them from this show or get motivated to help support from listening to this show. So if you run a nonprofit organization that is, you know, of the highest quality along those lines, like the FFF, something like that, we could probably work something out too. All the instructions there, how to contact me again at scotthorton.org/donate. And thank you, everybody, very much for your support. I sure appreciate it. You want the show to be here, right? Hey, I'm Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you can hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything. I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples and email me, scott@scotthorton.org, for more information. See you there. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, the Scott Horton Show. Jacob Hornberg is going to be on. I don't want to spoil the surprise what he's going to be on about. It's funny as hell, though. I mean, in a tragic kind of a hilarious way. Good old Jacob Hornberg, speaking of the Future Freedom Foundation. Yeah. All right, and you know what? By the way, let me go ahead and mention the rest of my sponsors, too. LibertyStickers.com and TheBumperSticker.com. Of course, I invented both companies. It was one company. I invented it back in the day. I sold it to Rick because he's a businessman, unlike me, the failure of a businessman. And he's done a great job. He's kept the whole thing in business and going strong, creating jobs for the local economy and all this kind of crap for the last decade and more. And I'm really proud of him and the great work that he does. And I'm very happy that he also hawks my anti-government slogans from Liberty Stickers so that people can spread the hate around. There was nothing like when I lived out in L.A., driving around in L.A. and seeing my Liberty Stickers on people's bumpers out there. Admittedly, it happens more often in Austin than in, out in L.A., but still, that was cool. LibertyStickers.com. And your band or your business, you need stickers, they'll do them. Custom stickers, they got a great art guy, and they got, it's great, and they can do high-quality graphics and all that. So check them out, TheBumperSticker.com. And then, of course, Wall Street Window and The War State. That's Michael Swanson. He's the author of The War State, which is a great history of the early Cold War, Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy years, and the rise of the national security state after World War II, well, during and after World War II. Great book. And also Wall Street Window, where he gives investment advice. If you're one of them people who has money and you're not sure where to put it to try to keep it safe, you can follow his lead. And Wall Street Window, it's a great idea for a site. It's a great thing to do. He just says, look, here's everything that I'm doing. So you can play along and see whether it works out on paper over the long term and wish that you had gone ahead and played along with real money at the time. Or you can go ahead and get started with real money and just see. Here's a guy who gets out of the bubble in time, in plenty of time, every time. Help you protect your assets there. Wall Street Window, that's the great Mike Swanson, wallstreetwindow.com. And then, of course, there is RRBI, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage. And if you're looking to buy gold and silver, they can set you up with that, man, for a very modest price. And they've been around for a long time. They've been around since the 70s, and they've got a lot of credibility. And they're libertarian types, too, and good guys. So that's RRBI. That's how you remember it, like a run batted in. RRBI.co. RRBI.co for Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. And they buy and sell, or I guess they're just, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I don't think they buy. They sell. They help to arrange the sale of precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, palladium. That's their business. They're great at it. They charge a very modest fee for their service, and definitely worth your business there. Roberts & Roberts, and thanks again to them and to all of them for helping to support the show there. So, yeah, it should be worth it. Oh, and Braswell. Man, I owe him two months of advertising for free because I still haven't finished his damn book and cut a spot about it yet. Oh, and also, you know, I should mention, at least I get a little bit of kickback from Liberty.me, which is a cool thing. If you sign up for Liberty.me and you type in promo code Scott or whatever, I get a little bit of a kickback for you signing up for Liberty.me. And then there's Audible trial. If you want to get Audible account and you go to Audible trial and use promo code Scott Horton Show there, then I get a little bit of a kickback from that. And Listen and Think Audio has been very generous to me. And, I almost said too much. I won't say too much. But anyway, they do audiobooks. And they do libertarian audiobooks and some great ones, too. Go check out their roster. They've got some really great ones already going on there at listenandthinkaudio.com. And so, is that everybody? God, I hope that's everybody. Oh, no, My Heroes Think Statues. Now, here's the thing about this. These things ought to be absolutely flying off the shelves. And I guess I haven't talked to them lately to find out how many he's selling. They're really great statues, little busts, of Harry Brown, Murray Rothbard, Ludwig von Mises, and Ron Paul. And soon, I think all four of those, right? Yeah. And then soon he's coming out with Hayek, Hazlitt, and George Carlin. And that's at myheroesthink.com. I've got the bus to Harry Brown. It's really great. I wish I had room for this desk. It would be on my desk, but it's on my bookshelf at least. And anyway, I know y'all are a bunch of Rothbardians like me. So give a bust of Rothbard to a Rothbardian friend. Why not? The great, the heroic Murray Rothbard. All right. That's kind of an inside joke. Kind of. All right. And then, yeah. All right. So let's talk about news. Let's talk about how the fascist military dictatorship in Egypt is urging U.S. restraint over Missouri unrest. Cairo, August 19th, Reuters. Egypt on Tuesday urged U.S. authorities to exercise restraint in dealing with racially charged demonstrations in Ferguson, Missouri, echoing language Washington used to caution Egypt as it cracked down on Islamist protesters last year. It is unusual for Egypt to criticize such a major donor. And it was... donor. And it was not immediately clear why the government would have taken such a step. Ties between Washington and Cairo were strained after Egyptian security forces killed hundreds of Muslim Brotherhood. It was more than 1,000 supporters following the army's ousting of the freely elected president, Mohamed Morsi, in July 2013. Western allies have voiced concerns about the democratic credentials of President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, the army chief who toppled Morsi and went on to... It's Morsi. I don't know why they're choosing to use a U. Everybody else calls him Morsi. And went on to win elections. The United States has, however, continued to provide military and other support to Cairo. Yeah, along with assurances that, hey, sometimes we've got to talk bad about you, but we don't really mean it. And I'm sure it goes the other way, too. Of course, the military coup d'etat used as an excuse that America backs the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is an American plot to subvert us. So the military must come in and save the day, which is, of course, completely laughable, except as Adam Morrow continues to point out on the show, the control over the media in Egypt is near absolute. And they just don't hear any other, you know, any kind of real challenge to this narrative whatsoever. So obviously they don't mean that. It's Sisi himself who is the American CIA conspiracy to overthrow democracy and maintain a fascist military dictatorship, because that's what Israel wants. And so that's what America wants. And so the fact that they keep sending them all the money and weapons is sort of kind of all the clue you need to that, I think. As Eric Margolies has put it, the entire Egyptian military and the American military are joined at the hip, absolutely. You know, now maybe that has, maybe there are a little bit of hard feelings and a little bit of pullback there, but not qualitatively. Come on. And anyway, I just think this is hilarious, and I instruct you to think that this is hilarious, that the Egyptian American sock puppet military dictatorship is lecturing the United States for, you know, our security forces going out of control. In Ferguson, 31 arrested last night as huge show of force fails, reads The Guardian. And we'll be back with Jacob Hornberger in just a sec. Hey, Al Scott here for MyHeroesThink.com. They sell beautiful 7-inch busts of libertarian heroes Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, Ron Paul, and Harry Brown. These finely crafted statues from MyHeroesThink.com make excellent decorations for your desktop at work, bookends for your shelves, or gifts for that special individualist in your life. They're also all available in colors now, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. Coming soon, Hayek, Hazlitt, Carlin. Use promo code Scott Horton and save $5 at MyHeroesThink.com. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the thing here. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. And our first guest, maybe our guest today. I'm not sure. I got a few more invites out. We'll see. But it's our friend Jacob Hornberger. He's the founder and the president of the Future of Freedom Foundation at FFF.org. And, of course, they're the reason that I don't agree with you about everything. The Illuminati pays them to pay me to think that you're wrong about stuff. So that's why I'm so compromised. It's Hornberger, Bovard, Richman, and the other rulers of the universe who tell me what to pretend to think. So thank you very much for that, Jacob, and welcome back to the show.
It's always a pleasure to be here, Scott.
Pardon me for indulging in other people's stupid conspiracy theories for a moment there. It's a little bit of fun. Hey, listen, so here's the thing. You wrote this. I can't even think about it without laughing my ass off. It's called Embracing Communism. We're running it today as a viewpoint at antiwar.com. Embracing Communists. Pardon me. Yeah, same difference in a way. Embracing Communists here at fff.org. And it's about America's relationship, ever-escalating relationship with Vietnam, but in a nice way escalating or not. Tell me, Jacob.
Well, it is one of the most incredible things you've ever seen. I mean, I would invite people to read my articles, but also read my articles because I have the link there to the New York Times article about what happened here. And the reason that you want to look at the New York Times article is not just the article, but the photograph that comes with the article. It's incredible. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dempsey, is in Vietnam, which, as we all know, is run by a communist regime, the same communist regime that ousted the U.S. From Vietnam after killing some 58,000 American soldiers. And he's saluting. He's passing in review of communist soldiers saluting. I mean, did you ever think you'd see a day when an American Army general would be reviewing communist troops and saluting them? And the purpose of his visit is to get a partnership established with the Vietnamese communist regime, where the U.S. is selling weapons to them and entering into a partnership as a counterbalance against China. You know, in other words, the big same power politics we see in the Middle East and the rest of the world, where the U.S. is making such a mess. They're now going over to Asia. But what's phenomenal to me, Scott, I mean, let's not forget, this is the Vietnam War, you know, where they said, we have to go to Vietnam, we have to sacrifice all these American soldiers because the communists are coming to get us and communism's so bad. This is the same regime that the guy's now saluting and trying to enter into a partnership with. It's incredible.
Yeah, it really is something else. And, I mean, there's so many different things about it. I mean, I'm not even sure where to begin with all this. How about the fact that, well, first of all, he's sitting there reviewing them, but they're really the ones who are the supplicants in this situation. I mean, it's funny. It looks like he's saluting them, but really they're saluting him after whooping America's ass 30 years ago. Oh, no, I'm getting old. 35, 40 years ago. There they are basically being folded into the American empire anyway. But then there's also the great irony of America using Vietnam as a counterweight to China, when the entire excuse for the war was that Ho Chi Minh was nothing but a sock puppet for Mao Zedong, and that if we didn't stop the dominoes from falling, this united communist front was going to conquer all of East Asia. And now here we are relying on the Vietnamese nationalism of the communist regime, right? Not the southern regime, the communist regime that won the war to help hem in China. Not that they're going to invade them or anything, but to be a counterweight to them in the region. And their aims and goals undermines. And wasn't it the Democrats? Does it matter how many decades ago it was, Jacob, that it was the Democrats that were the same ones pushing this nonsense, when here's the very same party a few decades later is willing to go sell them weapons now?
Yeah, and it's not just making nice with a nation state that defeated the U.S. on the battlefield. I mean, that would be one thing if it was just a regular regime that, like Britain, you know, Britain and the U.S. got in a war in 1812 and so forth. We're talking about a communist regime. The real nature of this regime has not changed over the last 30, 40 years. It has remained a communist regime. And remember, you know, all the great anti-communist fervor among conservatives, and it was, I mean, the antipathy toward communism is justified. You and I as libertarians, everything in our fiber is against communism and socialism and so forth. But we certainly would not defend all the Cold War antics and all the you know, big, the adoption of essentially communist tactics to fight communism.
Right.
And so here is the U.S. military embracing a communist regime. I mean, in and of itself, even if there had been no war against against the North Vietnamese. I would say it's just disgraceful when you make nice with communists. And but like I put in my article, there's nothing new about this. That it really goes to show you what the U.S. national security state has done to our nation. This apparatus that was adopted after World War II. They entered into the partnership with the mafia, don't forget, to assassinate Castro. This is a formal partnership that was entered into with this criminal organization that's out giving drugs to kids and committing murders and extortion and blackmail. They entered into a partnership with them. They entered into a partnership with German Nazis after the war, and now you have them committing our country to a partnership with communists, a communist regime. And really, we know what this is about. They're trying to get them to buy American weapons in order to create that sense of dependency where they can control them the way they control the Egyptian dictatorship that's dependent on U.S. weapons and so forth. It's classic military tactics. You know, we'll furnish you the weapons, maybe even for free, and then you'll have to do our bidding because we're the only ones who can give you the repair parts for it.
Yeah, it's such a protection racket. Well, and you know, and I want to ask you a lot more about America's policy toward Cuba in the next segment, actually. But as far as making nice, I wonder if you make a difference between, say, like, you know, opening the door to China, Nixon going to China and saying, let's end our Cold War against each other in trade, versus what we're doing with Vietnam now, where we're trying to make them a satellite of our empire and you know, government to government transfers and particularly weapons like you're talking about, as opposed to just let's let, you know, capital and goods cross these borders back and forth.
That is a fascinating question. I'm glad
you did mention you didn't support any America adopting communist methods to fight communism, but communist methods include closing trade to communist countries, right?
Yeah, like the embargo against Cuba, you know, which we'll talk about in a little while. But
right.
But that's a classic example of depriving Americans of their rights in order to supposedly fight the communist regime in Cuba.
But so you're not against, you know, capitalists in America going and doing business with capitalists in Vietnam. You're just complaining about weapons and government involvement. Is that right?
Exactly. That what the ideal that you do is you get the U.S. government to lift all the restrictions on the ability of American citizens to travel and trade abroad. So if Americans want to go to communist China or go to the Soviet Union or when it was there or China or Cuba or North Korea, there should be free to do so. The government should not have these embargoes and trade restrictions and immigration controls and so forth. But keep the government from entering into these alliances and partnerships, especially with communist regimes.
Yeah.
So you can have a system, for example, with Cuba, where you lift the embargo, liberate the American people to travel and trade with Cuba. We libertarians would embrace that, because it's dealing with freedom. But the government itself has no business entering into partnerships, alliances, selling weaponry, and that sort of thing. They've got things, everything's upside down, Scott. They constrain the American people from traveling in these countries and trading there, like with Cuba and so forth, but they unleash the U.S. government. I mean, imagine a military official serving as our diplomat in North Vietnam.
Right.
I mean, why isn't the State Department over there?
All right, I'm sorry. Hold it right there. We'll be right back with Jacob Hornberger.
Okay.
That's a great point to pick it up on the other side of this break. One sec, y'all. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. darrenscoffee.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I just got an email from Tiffany at Voices of Liberty. I've been forgetting to mention, I'm on Voices of Liberty now. They're running just sort of best ofs, not everything, but that's kind of a cool deal there. Ron Paul's new project. Very happy to be a part of that. I'm in the middle of talking with Jacob Hornberger about a libertarian approach to communist countries. You know, China is obviously much more of a fascist dictatorship than a communist one now, but it's still run by the Communist Party, of course. But
you know, Mao died and Deng took over back in the 70s, and they've been much more mixed economy, a quasi-free market, like we have here in America, Jacob, since then, but still a one-party dictatorship. Vietnam, of course, is much more communist than capitalist, much more communist than China is, I think, probably. And yet, now, when we talk about that distinction, I think I probably oversimplified it in my question to you in the first place, but I want to kind of parse this thing a little bit further between the difference between, say, Nixon going to China and saying, let's end our Cold War and open up our trade and relations, compared to, in this case, like we're talking about, directly arming the Vietnamese government that they can be more effective, ruthless killers of their own people, etc. But I'm also curious about the capitalists, too, though. You know, the Chase Bank wants to build a factory so that Nike can get shoes made at way, way below U.S. market rates. Okay, I guess they're free to do that or whatever, that's fine. Except for the fact that the people of Vietnam, I think you would agree, aren't free. They're captives. Their wages are not set by any kind of market force. Their wages are set basically by some commies that these American corporations are in effect hiring to bring them artificially cheap workers to do their bidding for them. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a communist country for the same scam to take place in other places where governments are very powerful and people are very politically weak. And I know that it's capitalism that brings people up from nothing so that they can have any power to fight back with at all. To twist Chomsky's phrase, widening the floor of the cage, so people got a running start, they can actually do something about it, and that kind of thing. And I'm sure factory employment's a lot better than dying in the dirt, but I think you understand what I'm getting at here, that it doesn't, that those things don't necessarily absolve guilt of American corporations going and basically hiring these governments to bring these people who have, you know, who are exploiting these people rather than just hiring people who work cheap, if you understand what I mean, kind of thing.
Yeah, because you've got socialist interventionist, as you put it, fascist government programs in virtually every country on earth, including here in the United States. But my position is that American businessmen, American people, the private sector should be free to go into other countries and operate under their systems. They may do things that are unethical. They may do things that are immoral. But that should be a decision that lies strictly with them, that the U.S. government, that's no business of the U.S. government as to how American businessmen are conducting themselves overseas. I mean, that's where we get into the area of moral suasion, where, let's say, American businesses are doing something immoral or unethical, that Americans can bring that to the attention of the American people and to the world, where there's boycotts and social ostracism and embarrassment of the company. And that's a much better method to get people to do the right thing than to use the force of the U.S. government to act as the world's policeman that's going to start, you know, serving as an enforcer of what it considers to be the good and the just all over the world. So liberate the American private sector, including the business community, to go into Cuba and so forth, operate under their system, and then leave it to the private sector to try to move people in the right direction, while at the same time doing our best here in America to establish a total free market society to serve as a model for the rest of the world so that the world can at least have a model to say, hey, that's the ideal. And to me, that's what we libertarians should be doing, is trying to establish the free society here rather than using the government to try to do that overseas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, my theory is, and I think we can see this in China, that force really comes from spoiled, rotten wives of rich businessmen. And you can see how when the Communist Party, they can do anything they want to anyone, but when they cross a spoiled, rotten enough wife of a millionaire, billionaire Chinese businessman, then all of a sudden there's absolute hell to pay. And in a sense, like, we are just humans, right? And it's almost Madisonian in the, like, we gotta spread out. We have all these factions. We need to let them check each other. And you have to let, you know, independent power has to be able to grow up to compete with the power that's already there somehow. And that's, you know, sometimes that's the best hope we got, is that, you know, pretty soon we'll have the upper middle class Chinese will be just as stuck up as the really rich ones, and they will absolutely stop putting up with the nonsense of the local police anymore. That's it. Because, you know, they feel good about themselves and they don't have to put up with that kind of thing anymore. And that's progress. It's kind of a slow and ugly way to go about it, but you can see that kind of thing happening.
Well, you know, a wealthier society serves as a counterweight to the tyranny of government. And now our ideal is that people make their money by providing goods and services that people want to pay for in a totally unhampered market economy. The problem with China and as well as here in the United States is all too many people make their money out of government largesse or government privileges. And that's an illegitimate form of government, and that's why we sometimes people say, oh, well, America is a capitalist system, and they try to put us libertarians into defending the kind of system we have. Well, we don't defend it. This is a corporatist system where the combination of business and the state serves as the means of income for all too many businesses, and especially with the military-industrial complex and all the people that furnish soft drinks and clothing drink to the military. And I mean, that's not the kind of system that you and I defend as libertarians. We want a totally unhampered market economy where the only way you can make money is by providing goods and services to people who are willing to pay for it. Consumer sovereignty.
Right. All right. Now, man, I kind of wanted to ask you about Ferguson too, but I think I'd really rather hear you talk about Cuba for a minute, even though it's not in the headlines right now. It's maybe not the sexiest topic for people to get into, but you have a great advantage at really knowing a lot about American-Cuban policy. And it's already 2014, and that means that there are kids, there are people listening to this show who are born in this century, Jacob. There are people listening to this show who are born, you know, at least in the Seinfeld era, that kind of thing, too. And I think, you know, probably they just have not had much of a chance to be exposed to this kind of history. So I was wondering if you could, you know, give us a good, you know, summary for a couple and a half minutes, if you could, of what America's policy has been toward Cuba since Fidel Castro came to power, and what can be done about it, maybe.
Yeah, and it is a sexy topic. I mean, it's an ongoing topic. It's an important topic for young people and old people alike, because it really demonstrates the system that we're living under here in the United States. I mean, here we have this general going over to Vietnam and making nice with the communist regime there, while at the same time defending an embargo that really squeezes the lifeblood out of the Cuban people and has for some 45 years, along with, of course, their socialist system there. But what's the point of this? I mean, it was always justified under the Cold War that, oh, the communists are bad. Well, here's this general over there making nice with the communists and trying to enter into a partnership with them. So it really goes to show you the whole sham of this thing. This embargo is cruel, it's brutal, and they're still obsessed with regime change in Cuba. Just a couple of weeks ago, the government was discovered having young people from Latin America risk their lives in order to foment dissent within Cuba. And then they had this other Twitter campaign, which is ridiculous, to try to, again, foment dissent. I mean, they've got this obsession with Cuba that's been there for, gosh, decades. And we libertarians say, the U.S. shouldn't be involved in this type of thing. Just liberate them. Don't do what you're doing like with Vietnam. Don't go over and try to make a partnership with Castro. You don't need to do that. You don't need to enter into a partnership with China or North Korea. Just leave them alone and lift the embargo. Leave the American people free to travel to Cuba and trade and so forth. That's the best way to counteract a communist regime, by using principles of freedom, not principles of communism.
Hey, could you estimate for me real fast? Just, I mean, and communism sucks anyway, Jacob, no doubt about it, but is there any way to estimate a percentage of how much worse the average Cuban's life has been, materially at least, due to America's embargo there?
Impossible to say, but I would say I'd put their socialist system at maybe 60% and the embargo at 40%. They're like squeezed between a vice, an economic vice.
Yeah, it's horrible. And meanwhile, we could have been the good guy. We could have been the only saving grace in their entire system this whole time. Well, at least we can trade with the Americans. But no, we won't even give them that. Oh, man. All right, listen, thank you so much for writing and for running your foundation and all that you do, Jacob. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure and an honor. Bye-bye.
That's the great Jacob Hornberger, everybody. FFF.org. Check out his article today at antiwar.com. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. What's funny is how out of date that onion clip is. Kids nowadays will be like, what's an iPod? Don't you just keep all your music on your phone? What's a BlackBerry? Anyway. So, there's some charity thing going around where everybody is supposed to dump ice water on themselves to raise money, to raise awareness of ALS, disease, syndrome, problem. And somebody on Twitter just tweeted out a picture of Alan Greenspan dumping a bucket full of ice water on Andrea Mitchell's head. I'm looking at that right now with my eyeballs in my brain. The one guy tweeted, this is a metaphor for something. And then the other guy responded, what is happening? And I'm more in line with the second guy there. What in the world is going on in the world? You know, the only reason they haven't cured ALS is because of all the wealth that Alan Greenspan destroyed. He's the most guilty person in the whole wide world. He actually does have... Nah, never mind. I was going to say he's got one mitigating thing, but you don't care about that. Here's the thing. Mitchell, among the most horrible journalists in America. Greenspan. Oh, man. What to say about him? I know what to say about him. Guess what? Ron Paul did a thing at Cato. Now, I don't know if you know, but back in the days of libertarian civil wars and whatever, Ron Paul and Cato were on opposite sides, and the Kochs never did support his career at all or his presidential campaigns at all. I know liberals might say, oh, Ron Paul, he's a front man for the Kochs. No, that's just not true. It's never been at all. They don't like him at all, and mostly it's because he's such a hardcore, hard money guy. Gold, gold, gold. All Mises. And no nonsense. And so that's part of what has made him kind of unacceptable to the Washington, D.C. crowd all the time, because they kind of like a Milton Friedman wise Federal Reserve policy kind of a shtick. Well, here's Ron Paul. The Fed is immoral. A speech at the Cato Institute. So thank you, Cato guys, Gene Healy and whoever else at Cato, for being cool and having Ron Paul come out. Of course, Ron Paul is a really sweet guy. He's not the type of guy who ever had a personal problem with anybody at Cato or anything like that, of course. It's just kind of an ideological divide about gold. And, you know, gold as money is just not acceptable in Washington, D.C. as a position, you know, inside the goalposts. It's just not. There's Ron Paul and then there's everybody else. And so Cato was happier being everybody else. That's the bottom line of it, I believe. But anyway, so here, they're being cool. They're having him out. And then he gives a speech. Ron Paul, U.S. monetary policy, a grand deception. It's half an hour long. I guess I actually could play it on the show today. Three segments. That ain't bad. I guess I'll let chat room guys decide if you want to hear the speech. But, you know, I could go ahead and tell you. Here's more or less what he said, and here's exactly what Alan Greenspan is guilty of. Here's the thing about central banking. And I know it sounds boring and lame if you don't know anything about it, but you got to kind of be a little curious as to why so many people think that the Federal Reserve Bank, of all things, the Federal Reserve System, is interesting at all. Why do they even care at all? And the answer is, and I don't know if they always answer it right, but the answer is because it's the biggest ripoff ever in the history of all of humanity. There's never been a fraud as wide, as deep, as planetary in scale as the system of central banking led by the Federal Reserve on Earth right now. U.S. dollar hegemony and the so-called business cycle, which is in fact the paper money cycle, the imaginary, newly created out of political power. People say magic wand. It's political power. Creates new money. Expands bank credit. And that's what the Fed is it's a combination between the banks and the government, a promise of the banks and the government to each other. The banks will always buy the government's bonds, and the government will always allow the banks to expand their own bank credit with a license from the government, and then they can all make a lot of money. And then, of course, when the banks go under, when the bubble pops, the government promises to bail them out and keep the whole scam going. And hell, a lot of them, actually, they really just believe in bad economics. They don't, you know, they're just bad on economics, and they just continue that this is how they think it has to be, and they're wrong. And the result is times sometimes seem pretty good. Well, they might be pretty good, or there might be something good going on there, but also there's a giant bubble of artificial prosperity, bad investments that seem good, even for a while, that seem to pay off for a while. But then when the artificial expansion of bank credit comes to an end, as it must, then all of the bad bets are realized and all the bad debts come due, and you have massive crashes like we had in 2008, like we had in 1999 and 2000, like we had in 1988, like we had in 1968. And so that's what they do. Bubble after bubble after bubble. And it works. It's good for you if you're a banker and you're made whole no matter what bad bets you make in the marketplace. Just fine. And it's good for you if you're an arms manufacturer and or any kind of participant in the military economy, because you stay paid. You got your contract. Of course, as we saw with the stimulus, what was the stimulus? The stimulus was just the bailout for the state governments. The national government will make sure they always all stay in business no matter what. Picking up the slack that they can't afford in during the bad times. But then everybody else gets the shaft. The lower on the income scale you are, regardless of any nonsense they preach about progressive income taxation, the lower on the income scale you are, the more taxes you pay as a percentage of your actual earnings, and the less likely you are to be bailed out in any way that will actually help you when the bad times come. Now, for me, I would recommend everyone stop as much as you can being the demand for their supply at all. Shouldn't want anything from them. But you should recognize why you need their help. You need their help because they're the ones who broke your leg. Now they're the ones offering you crutches. You know, they're the ones who drive up the price of education with artificial bank credit expansion. So now you need a loan to go to college. They're the ones who drive up the price of housing through the roof. We have no idea what prices of houses would be on a free market in America right now. But they sure as hell wouldn't be where they are right now. They'd be lower in most places anyway. So that's why you need a 30-year loan, and that's why the economy needs Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, because only government intervention can get enough people the ability to get into a house in a market where all the prices are artificially high. And then it's the same thing with the stock market. The only reason everybody has to invest in the stock market is because they can't make a dime off of the interest rate down at the local thrift. You can't just park your money. Your grandma can't just park her money in her savings account and make a tidy little bit of interest and it's all right. And now she can take care of herself with what grandpa left her and that kind of thing. No way, man. She's got to become a speculator. She's got to start speculating in land. The interest rate is 0.0%, man. If she parks her money there, she's losing out to inflation. So she has to do something. It might as well be a crime to save right now, the way they have it set up. So then what does she do? She has to go into the stock market and invest in what? The stock market bubble. She gets left holding the empty bag while all the guys at the top run off with the yachts and the diamonds and all the money and the politicians in their pockets so they can keep doing it again. That's what Greenspan's guilty of. He was the chairman of the Open Market Committee for 20 years or something. And he's the one what made the bubble. After Volcker was done, In came Greenspan. He made the bubble that popped in 88. He made the bubble that popped in 92. He made the bubble that popped in 99. He made the bubble that Bernanke popped for him in 2000, 2008. And now their predecessor, Yellen, is doing the exact same thing. It's the only thing they know how to do. Keep printing money. So, if you want to sell weapons to the Pentagon, you can cash in. The rest of us, we're kind of screwed. Invest in Citigroup. They're a safe bet for you. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Hey, I got another guest answering me back, Mark Hyden, from Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty, is going to be on the show. I'm pretty sure at the top of next hour. He's a good guy, man. It's a very important project, and it's, I'll tell you why it's very important, because aside from how obviously important it is on its face to end the legalization of government murdering people, which is its own good, it's from the right. And it's not some put on, a bunch of Center for Constitutional Rights, patchouli stinking pinkos pretending to be conservatives. No, no, no. Real conservatives are saying, hold on now. Our government's a bit out of control, and when it comes to putting people to death, yeah, that's one area where they are out of control, and they've got to be reined in. For basic conservative principles, real conservative principles, have nothing to do with worshiping whoever happens to be the most powerful Republican politician at any given time. But things like, you know, sanity and decency. valuing human life and or, you know, religious values more than allegiance to government and its power. And then even when it comes to allegiance to government, you know, a lot of conservatives, they're former military men. We got a lot of former military men in America, no doubt about that. And one good side effect of that is a lot of guys have, in their own minds, certainly, literally fought and killed and bled in the name of America's Constitution. No matter how bad LBJ or George W. Bush or Barack Obama was screwing them, they have a real commitment to the first law of America, the law that allows the U.S. government to exist. Why is there a legislative, executive, and judicial branch? Because the Constitution was ratified and allows them to exist and describes their powers and etc. So, a lot of conservatives are really dedicated to what they consider very basic principles that, at least when they stop and think about it, really do come before loyalty to Republican policies. Like, yeah, stick a needle in him! Stick a needle in him! That would be a more common day conservative value, a more unthinking one. But anyway, so this is something that I wanted to talk about earlier on the show, and I'm sorry, I build such contempt for conservatives into the things that I say. It makes it it's a hell of a lousy way to convert and recruit people, but I admit I'm a little bit alienated. But the point being is this. What we need in America, and I said this on my very first radio show in 1998, it was mostly about Waco, because I thought that was a good way to wake people up to what the hell is going on around here, okay? And so my first show was all about Waco, and then, but at the end, my whole speech was about how I think that if you look at regular Joe right-wingers, and you look at regular Joe left-wingers, that really we all have a lot of the same priorities. At least certainly we're opposed to a lot of the same things. Now, you guys can scratch each other's eyes out all day long about you know, abortion and gay marriage and these kinds of issues, I guess, if you want to. But it seems to me like what's most important is, you know, the system, the very structure of our society and how it works and how it's supposed to work. And so first and foremost, what we need is peace, and we need an entire nationwide, society-wide, population-wide, deep commitment to preserving the Bill of Rights. And really, and that means when the court decides wrong, no, we keep suing over it until we get the next case heard over it, because no, we are keeping our Bill of Rights. You cannot take it away. It's maybe all we got, but and we don't have it now, but it can be fought for. It's not officially canceled yet. And we want to kick the zillionaires off welfare. We want to end what Ike Eisenhower, the hero general of World War II and two-term president of the United States, termed on his last day in office, the military-industrial complex that took all of his might. And he was a powerful bureaucrat. He was a serious-ass chief executive. He weighed more on the executive branch than any president probably in any sort of modern history. And it was everything he could do to tell the army, no, 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 you can't have that money, whatever it was on the issues they were fighting. He wanted a new look, nuclear posture with a small army ground force, because he didn't want the army going around wanting to use it all the time. And, you know, we all know what the problem is, man. We all know the biggest industries in America are the most corrupt ones and are the ones most intertwined with the state. And the state itself is so big that the executive branch itself is the biggest organization in the history of humanity and is a threat to every living, breathing thing on this planet and even all the different kind of weird algae and whatever, too. And so, listen, if when it comes down to it, we all want fair trials, man. Even really mean, stupid, drunken right-wingers, if you settle them down a little bit, they want fair trials in case it's someone accuses somebody that they care about. You got to have a right to argue that, nuh-uh, man, it wasn't me and that kind of thing. We all believe in that. Fair trials, right? We all believe in free speech. Even when it's people saying things that we think are unpopular, we don't want to lose that, do we? And we don't want to live in poverty because our government wasted all of our money making new enemies for us, slaughtering innocent people all over the world either. You don't have to be a libertarian or a leftist of any kind to be against the militarization of the police. That should be, as they wrote in National Review, that is a conservative priority, damn it. That we have constitutional law and that police, as a government agency, has as many incentives built into forcing them to acting right as possible, because they are subject to the same kinds of impunity and lack of incentives to behave right as other government bureaucracies, i.e. it's somebody else's money, i.e. you can't sue them, they have immunity, i.e. they can never get prosecuted because they'll just never be indicted because the prosecutor will always look away when it's a fellow government official committing a crime, because that's just how it is. That's the name of the syndicate, you know. But we all, left, right, and libertarian, I think the people of the country, unlike the entire political class, which disagrees with us completely on all these things, I think the left, right, and the libertarians of this country can really rally around rolling back the police state. And further, I think it's only, we only have a couple of years to do it, because as soon as the next Republic, I don't think Hillary will be the president. I just think her negatives are too high. I don't know. Maybe it will be her. But and if it's her, then we'll have a little bit more time. But if it's a Republican president, which is a very real risk, if it's a Republican president, the right will go 100% back to worshiping the state. Liberals tend to be pretty good on civil rightsy kind of stuff, especially in an emergency like this. So we can right now really push left, right, and libertarian to roll back the police state, roll back the death penalty, militarization as much as we can. Why not? And we need the right's help bad right now to do it. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, Al Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at CouncilForTheNationalInterest.org. Hey, y'all. How's it going? Welcome back to the show. Another night of violence last night in Ferguson. I saw a clip of CNN today with some National Guard soldiers standing in the background. What you're about to hear is not a rationalization whatsoever. I'm absolutely against their presence. They ought to be gone. But it's just interesting to note. It's really my comment is more about the police than them. It's sort of the example they set. I don't know for sure that these guys are Iraq War veterans or not, but they're in the National Guard. They may very well be. But at least they're trained to be warriors. I mean, not obviously as hardcore as some Army Rangers or some, Marines. But compared to local cops, they are actual warriors. Right? And you can tell just by looking at them, just by a glance at them in the background, you can tell that, man, they're as cool, calm, and collected as can be. They're not, and I don't know what all they did last night. I may be wrong. Maybe they helped the cops hurt people last night, and I'm off base here. But it seemed like at least their attitude was, meh, my job is just standing around here. They're not looking at this as an opportunity to do something. They're looking at this like some kind of weird side mission that, okay, I have to, you know, help keep the peace around here a little bit during this temporary crisis kind of thing. But they seem, I'm kind of just making this up based on what I saw on TV earlier, but I admitted that. They seem like, you know, they're standing there with their arms crossed and whatever. They're just kind of talking. They don't seem like they're really excited to now have an opportunity to do something. Because, you know, a real gangster don't talk so loud. You know what I mean? That's how it is. They're actual killers. These cops are all just a bunch of wannabe soldiers is what they are. Can't wait to be unleashed to go to war against, quote unquote, their own community. The community next door that they're ostensibly sworn to protect. The National Guard guys have an attitude, apparently, that seems like it's a lot more about, you know, piling sandbags to keep the river back in a rainstorm kind of public service just sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like what we could imagine the National Guard being in real peacetime. In a normal country with a rule of law, you know, there's a big, you know, natural disaster or, you know, the hooligans got out of control after the ball game or whatever it was so bad that, okay, so the National Guard comes out and stands around and impresses people with their presence that like, okay, come on, guys. Come on or else I'll tell the cops to come over here and arrest you. All right. This is America, man. But what I'm looking at right here, this is a bunch of cops, all of them pointing their guns at unarmed, and they know, entirely unarmed, civilian protesters. Oh, someone got hit with a plastic water bottle that some commie threw. Shut up. The FBI paid that commie to be there in the first place. Everybody knows that. Oh, baby got hit with a water bottle. And, you know, I saw this going around on Twitter last night, but I thought of it first because, god dang, man, this is the first rule of weapons, and you don't have to be a gun guy to know this, okay? You do not have to be a gun guy. Everyone knows. It's rule number one. You treat all firearms like they are loaded and cocked and as dangerous as can be at all times. and you do not point it. It's the same rule number one. And you do not point it at someone unless, yes, you are intending to use or very seriously threaten deadly force against someone for a very good damned reason. That's it. That's what it means to be a grown-up with a gun. To be even a child with a gun. You do not point it at people unless it's because you are going to kill them now. Or at least you are going to tell them, you better stop or I'm going to kill you. Credible threat, proportional threat to aggression would be, you know, best case scenario there, yeah. But these cops, a mob of cops, armed with AR-15s or M4s, whatever version, more or less the same damn thing there. I don't know. I guess M4s have a full auto mode. I don't know if theirs do. But anyway, here they are pointing their rifles at not even a mob, at just a group of unarmed protesters. And there's as many CNN and MSNBC reporters as there are protesters there. And they're all just a bunch of wannabe guardsmen. And, you know, I'm sure some real-ass jarheads would make fun of the National Guard, right? But the National Guard, you know what the National Guard is? The National Guard is high school to a sixth grader, right? The cops are sixth graders. Imagine, wow, high school years from now and taller, bigger, older people becoming adults. And what's that like? The cops are the sixth graders, the little boys who should have put away their toys a couple of years ago by now, actually. Like to play dress up, like to pretend that they're soldiers, and like to kill innocent people in the process. And it's a miracle, I think we'd all have to agree, that no one else has been killed by the cops since this whole thing happened. And again, I want to reiterate, in case you turned in late, I'm not advocating for the guards' presence out there at all. I did advocate for the state police. I would rather have a no-state solution to everything all the time, but that goes without saying. In this case, I did, in fact, before they did it, I called for the state police to come out with handguns and pistols only and, you know, regular civilian police cars and shirts and slacks instead of all this militarism. And they ended up doing exactly what I said to do. It's pretty obvious that that was the right thing to do. And they did that for a little while, but then they keep militarizing again. They called off their curfew, but they still come out all armed up. And a lot of people were arrested and a lot of people were shot with rubber bullets and gas with tear gas. I saw a lady tweeting, hey, cops, there are babies in here trying to sleep and you're destroying their little eardrums with your sound weapons. And what are they doing? Shooting sound weapons at people in a neighborhood where, yeah, for all you know, that baby's 2 days old, man. Who are these guys? I'll tell you what they are. They're the state. They're an alien force. A parasite attached to our society. And they claim we need them, but it's just not so. That's just not so. And yes, you need law. But you don't need a national... You don't need a monopoly of any kind on government to have law. That's the myth that they would have you believe. It's like you couldn't have money if it wasn't government money with George Washington on it. When in fact, that's the worst kind of money you could have, would be to trust your government with deciding how much there should be at any given time, for crying out loud. And anyway, we really don't need them at all. You see what they've become. And don't say you weren't warned, because some of us have been kooks about this for 20 years, man. Look at what happened to Waco. You know, these cops marching down the street and watching the video from the footage from last night, they look just like the ATF showed up at the Branch Davidians' house. Their house, their compound. Yeah, their compound made out of particle board. Some compound. Showed up at their house / church on a Sunday morning. Killed 6 of them. Over nothing, over supposedly some unpaid taxes. and then turned everything over to the FBI, who ended up murdering another 86 of them 6 weeks later. This has been going on a long, long time here. I ain't got to tell any black people that. They know. I'm glad that CNN and MSNBC are finally noticing. Somebody mace Jake Tapper so we'll never forget. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement. Featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more, The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Listen, I'm the worst at this, so forgive me, but I got a friend, not really a friend, an acquaintance, a fan of the show, who's offered up $500 worth of matching funds. Said if I can get 10 people to donate $50, he'll match it. So that sounds pretty good, right? Matching funds for the show. I need to get better about this. I'm going to get better about this. Soliciting support, subscriptions, and that kind of thing from you guys, as well as trying to badger you into advertising on the show and supporting the show. The more you support the show, the less I got to talk about how much support the show needs. But it does need some. So it is what it is. But I have a very gracious gentleman has offered up $500 if you guys will donate $500. Then he will also donate $500. But contingent upon you guys coming through. So you see how that's an attempt to manipulate you and bait you into going ahead and donating that, like, oh, wow, so if I give 50, it's sort of like I'm giving 100. Yes, exactly. Isn't that great? What a perfect opportunity for you to give me $100 when you really only have to give me 50 to give me 100. Sounds like a great deal to me, too. Just stop by scotthorton.org/donate and you can find out all about how to do that. All right, good. Now I'm going to stop talking about that right now. You're welcome. Somalia. So listen, I know. I can feel it even when I say it. People hear Somalia and they go, meh, who cares about Somalia, dude? That's not news in my life. You're too far away from me now, Horton. I just don't care. But you have to because it's all your government's fault. That's why. And what's all your government's fault is a lot of dead bodies, man, a lot. Like, say, for example, 250,000 starved to death. The worst kind of famine. If you're old like me, you might remember Michael Jackson and Cyndi Lauper and the Hands Across America. We are the world. We are the children. We've got to raise a lot of money to help feed the people of Ethiopia. Well, they were starving because the IMF was paying their communist government to stay in power. And it, of course, had rounded up everyone and put them on collective farms, which were just prisons, on the worst land. And so they were starving. And anyway, it's just like that. I mean, it's an Ethiopia 1980s level absolute catastrophe. And if it wasn't America's fault, you'd know all about it no matter what. You wouldn't have a choice. It would be on all the time. If it was some other country's fault, like, say, China had been meddling around over there, causing a war and making a famine 10,000 times worse, then it would be huge. You would have George Clooney in your face about it every day, talking about what you got to do about it. But so here's the story. And you know, I don't know. I got an email this morning from Thomas Mountain. He wrote a thing, probably for Counterpunch, I don't know, but he sent it to me, and he kind of attacks Scahill. Well, he severely attacks Jeremy Scahill for writing about Somalia and going there actually in 2011, but not writing about the famine. He didn't know about the famine. And I don't know if it's his own damn fault he didn't know about the famine, or maybe, I don't know. Maybe it was just impossible for him to go that far out into the country in order to do it, and the story he was chasing was in Mogadishu, and he just didn't know. I don't know. I still think Jeremy Scahill is a great reporter. I read his whole damn book. And yes, I'm pissed that he didn't do the show after that, because I read the whole damn book, and it's like 550 pages. But anyway, it's good work for what it is. It ain't perfect, but it's damn good work. But Thomas Mountain is right that, man, the biggest lead was buried completely. The biggest story was buried completely. It's not just look at the horror and chaos that America's proxy war in Somalia over these years has led to. It's look at the pile of dead babies and children, literally. 260,000, mostly elderly and children under 5 years old. But all civilians, of course, any kind of warlord can get access to some food, he takes it. Of course, it was the most helpless in Somalia. And there was a terrible famine, and America's not responsible for the sunshine and the clouds and all that crap, and these things happen. However, in the rest, and actually in part of Ethiopia, the famine was also horrible. As Thomas Mountain writes, in the Ogaden region, which is basically, should be its own little mini-state, and they're the universally oppressed minority inside Ethiopia, they also suffered the brunt of this famine. But even when there's a famine, again, you know, the reason Ethiopia in the 80s was such a bad thing is because they lived in communism. And so there were no prices, there was no property, there was no market, there was no trade, there was no nothing but a bunch of lay down and die. And it's the same effect here. The American war destroyed the markets. So not only did the farmers have, you know, a much smaller percentage of them than usual, I don't know exactly, were able to even plant seeds in the first place. Smaller numbers than usual, nobody knows exactly, but huge percentages were able to harvest their crops. But then all the methods of distribution were broken. Everything is in chaos. There's no market to go to. And if you could get your food to the market, then if you get that far, there's nobody at the market because nobody has any money because the whole place is in chaos. You're talking about a tiny, pathetic, little, broke-ass country where people have dirt floors and crap and nothing. And America tearing them down lower than that, as low as they can, basically, destroying everything. So then when the sun came out and wouldn't go away, in 2010, 2011, and yes, Scahill should have known about this because I was interviewing Ken Menkhouse at the time, who's an expert on Somalia, and I was interviewing Leslie Lefkow from Human Rights Watch, and we were talking all about the famine all through 2010 and 11, and even later, I guess, certainly in 2010 and 11. But according to FuseNet, which is an NGO sponsored by the U.S. and U.K. governments, so in other words, they have every motive to want to lie and hush this up and spin it nicely, if anything. And I'm not saying they're corrupt in any way. I'm just saying objective mathematical incentives are toe the line, not contradict it. But here they are saying, and they're not really accusing America. They're just talking about the results of what America's done. I'm the one accusing America because America is the one. The American government, George W. Bush and his co-conspirators, they sent in the CIA to support the warlords and turn Somalia upside down from 2001 on. And when the people of Somalia rose up and joined forces to force those warlords out, finally in 2005, Bush then forced the Ethiopian government to invade and overthrow them and destroy them. And they've been at war ever since. And the Al-Shabaab militia that was nothing is now a regional affiliate of Al-Qaeda. And I'm not saying they have a lot of capital and a lot of access to international travel and who knows what. But they are now dedicated to the international jihadist movement rather than just their own, which was already bad enough after America turned it from nothing into something. The Islamic Courts Union that Bush overthrew Christmas 2006 with the Ethiopian invasion, the union was 13 groups. Al-Shabaab, the youth. They were the youth. They were the smallest and least influential of the groups. Be quiet, young man. Your elders are talking. But when it came to the fight, well, it was the young who picked up the rifles and fought and won and drove the Ethiopians out. But America, that's not good enough. America's been intervening ever since then. And how much time do I have? In 2008, when the Bush administration had to leave, Condoleezza Rice finally said, "Fine, Sheikh Sharif, the guy we overthrew, you can go ahead and be the president anyway. But it has to be within the form of the government that we created, the U.S.-UN transitional federal government, instead of the, you know, your way, the Islamic Courts Union." And he said, "Okay." And then al-Shabaab said, "You're a traitor. You're in it with the Americans, and now we're at war against you." And then, and this is where, you know, I'll always be grateful to Jeremy Scahill for this. It's just, this just blows my mind. It just kills me, this quote. Page 222 of Dirty Wars by Jeremy Scahill. And there is the American State Department flunky saying, "You know, all we ever wanted to do was take Sheikh Sharif down a couple of pegs. We didn't really want to completely overthrow him. We just want to get rid of everyone around him and bring him down and weaken his position." What? What? They killed hundreds of thousands of people. Hundreds of thousands of Somalis died. So they could take Sheikh Sharif down a peg and then put him back in power for another few years? And they're still dying in this war. And it does matter.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now. Selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. Our next guest is Mark Hyden. He's from Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty. The website is conservativesconcerned.org. Back on the show with a bit of update on progress you guys have been making. Happy to have you here. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me back on your show.
Very happy to have you here. So, I guess, first of all, go ahead, before we get to all the new news, go ahead and tell us what you're about and how you got that way and what exactly it is that you're up to.
Sure. Well, we are a national network of conservatives and some libertarians who believe that the death penalty is inconsistent with our core principles, and many of us come to this conclusion because it's not pro-life, the death penalty, because it risks killing innocent life. And it's not fiscally responsible because it costs more than life without parole. And beyond that, I don't believe that giving an error-prone government the power to kill you, I don't think that's limited government. So many conservatives are coming out against it, and that's in part why conservatives' concern about the death penalty formed.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's also the whole thing about legalizing the actual profession for the individual killers who work for the state. It's not the same thing as, and, you know, I don't know. I think we talked about this before. I think you admitted the same kind of feeling that you'd be a little bit torn. You hear about the absolute cruelty of some crimes that people engage in. It's pretty easy to think, I really don't care what happens to that guy after this, as long as it's something terrible, you know? But, That does require then legalizing the profession of meting out that terribleness, and especially when you're talking about killing somebody, it's not like an immediate proportional response to a threat to life. It's oftentimes you're talking years and years, maybe decades later, where, you know, now nobody even knows whether it's retribution or it's supposed to just be a deterrent to somebody else or what we're even doing, but you know, Johnson over here, it's actually his job to kill somebody. That's kind of a big deal.
That is pretty scary, and you're right. It does take decades generally to reach a death sentence or to actually implement the death penalty. And you're right, Scott, you're absolutely right that there's that guttural subjective feeling where, you know, there's some crimes that it just seems like it makes sense, that are so heinous that they do deserve the death penalty. But, you know, I ask everybody to try to remove those subjective feelings when you're looking at objective policy and take a step back and ask yourself, do you really trust the government to efficiently, effectively, and responsibly mete out this kind of justice when the risk is they may kill an innocent U.S. citizen, which makes them no better than the murderers that they're trying to execute?
Right. Yeah, and I think, Well, I don't know. It was probably a Brit said it first or something, but it is an American principle. I know because I learned it when I was a small kid that it's better to let 1,000 guilty men go free, or maybe an infinite number of guilty men go free, rather than to lock away and steal the life away from one innocent man.
That's right. That's a Blackstonian philosophy. And, you know, you can even go back to our forefathers. And certainly there's the Eighth Amendment, and some may agree or disagree about how that should affect the death penalty today. But we can certainly look at people like Benjamin Franklin, which I think most Americans probably like the guy, and James Madison, who was the father of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And both of those men completely opposed the death penalty. So this is not a new concept. It makes sense to oppose the death penalty if you're conservative or you're libertarian or you just are skeptical of government power.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's really important there what you mentioned about conservative consistency. This isn't like, well, we're conservatives, but we're against the death penalty. This is conservatism is mandating your opposition to the death penalty. Am I understanding you right here, Mark?
You are, and you know, you kind of touch on a point that I'm kind of ashamed to admit. I supported the death penalty for some years, even though I had some issues with it, and I knew it didn't line up with my principles, but I thought it was the conservative thing to do to support the death penalty. So I was willing to sacrifice some of my principles to support it. I tried to tell myself that, you know, maybe it is a pro-life policy if you can prove that you save more lives than you kill by accident. And that kind of utilitarian argument does not belong in conservatism or libertarianism.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's always been a contradiction that conservatives are against all the things that government does in the name of helping people. Not that I'm giving them points for actually helping people, you understand. But but it seems like conservatives are perfectly willing and, in fact, happy to support all of the most horrible things about government. It's most lethal violence, even use of atomic weapons, certainly aggressive invasions of Iraq, that kind of thing. That's a right-wing project. I don't know if you can call it a conservative one, but it's one that self-identified conservatives all over America sure lined up to support, and even torture and all kinds of things. And so it seems like, though, I guess from my point of view, if any conservative wants to be consistent like you are, at some point you're going to end up just not being a conservative anymore, and you're just going to be a libertarian because you realize that, yeah, all of those things about why government programs don't work apply to your local socialist security services known as the sheriff's department and police agencies and your court system and the very basic even constitutional structures. It's all basically the same mess, and for the same reasons. Government doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
I think there's a divergence that we've seen in conservatism, and I believe at least what I'm trying to go towards with my consistency, or at least what I hope is consistency, is bringing conservatism back to the traditional principles, not this new movement of pseudo-conservatism, which we've seen, you know, with Dick Cheney and many others. I'm trying to go back to the principles, and you alluded to this earlier, that you find it surprising that some conservatives would support the death penalty but reject other programs that are run by the government. And I think you make an excellent point, because I know so many conservatives, including myself, who we don't trust the government to deliver a piece of mail, but yet we want to entrust the government the greatest power of all over its citizens, the power to take its citizens' lives. And I think there is a massive inconsistency there, and I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah. Well, and you know, not everybody can be a plumb line libertarian, but the more libertarian the conservative, the more reasonable it seems to me. And again, just because of the consistency that we're talking about. Like, I think, you know, we do live in an imperfect world, and I'm at least willing to entertain minarchist arguments for having a constitutional republic and things. And we can argue another time about whether that's actually workable or not. But I understand that people think, hey, the best you can do is to, you know, have regular elections and try to keep your security services in check in this way and whatever. And so it's a reasonable enough position, even if I disagree with it. And so one can be a conservative, but it should always be, yeah, so we support law and order with our local sheriff's department as our mechanism, but only because it's our best alternative we've been able to come up with so far, not because, you know, it's the right thing to grant a group of people the right to use aggressive force against others, not because you know, we would definitely be doomed without them. But just, you know, maybe this is the best way of having a local security service we can come up with so far. That's still the far cry from, yeah, and they can torture people if they want because freedom and whatever, you know, nonsense that we've heard over the last decade especially.
Now, and you're absolutely right, and that gets into much broader foreign policy as well when you're looking at that. And you know,
but it's still, you know, just the blanket permission slip to government to go ahead and break the law to do what you say is right. That kind of attitude.
I agree with you, and there's a double standard of what the government decides is justice as opposed to what, you know, I think the average American would think is justice. And, you know, tortures shouldn't fit in with people's views of justice or suspending habeas corpus or anything like that. So you're spot on.
Yeah, and again, it all comes back to what should be at least the core of conservatism, the U.S. Constitution, and preserving you know, the very best parts of it anyway, the parts that protect our freedom. And, you know, the National Review Online, I'm sure you may have seen, Mark, ran an article recently about the police saying, hey, listen, law and order's great, but it shouldn't just be a knee-jerk responsive deference to all cops at all times because, in fact, you know, these poor black people have a point. Things have been getting a little bit out of hand here. And what's the right thing is the constitutional law, not necessarily whatever any police agency wants to do at any given time. And that is heroic coming from the National Review. That is a real step forward. And I don't know, I'm going to ask you on the other side of this break about the progress you've been having, and especially along those lines. One moment, y'all. We'll be right back with Mark Hyden after this. ConservativesConcerned.org. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. So I'm always trying to preach realignment. I don't practice it that well, but I do try. The best of the left, right, and the libertarians, we've got to get it together on peace and our Bill of Rights, or we won't have it anymore. And, you know, the death penalty, well, I don't know if that's exactly the Bill of Rights, but it's pretty close, and it's along the same lines of reigning in this government, which is more and more lawless all the time. And it's very important, Mark, right now that Barack Obama is in power. I don't think it's a safe bet that it'll be a Democrat next. It could very well be a Republican. And conservatives typically, I don't mean you, but other conservatives will be much harder to recruit to this cause when we have Republican leadership in D.C., and at least there's a big chance of that. But liberals tend to be pretty good on this kind of stuff, and I know there's a lot of Obama syndrome going around, you know, civil rightsy, politically correct liberals and progressives, they're pretty good on the death penalty pretty much by default, and they can, you know, I'm sure before you, it's probably every anti-death penalty group in America is mostly, you know, Quakers and pacifists and liberals and progressives of one kind or another. And then us libertarians, we're good on this stuff too. So, but now with you conservatives on board and leading more conservatives to get on board to build this national consensus, that's what it takes, right? It takes the politicians in the state capitals and in Washington, D.C. too, seeing that, listen, it's everybody against us. We don't have a demographic of political supporters that any longer support this issue. You know, our conservative voices are saying it's time to go ahead and change this too. And that's when the change will come, is when the people insist that the government consensus change along with ours.
That's right, Scott. And we're seeing that a lot of politicians are starting to get on board too. In Kentucky, Representative David Floyd, he's a Republican, a conservative pro-life politician, actually sponsored the legislation to repeal the death penalty there, which it hasn't happened yet. We're seeing the same thing in Kansas. We're seeing it in Nebraska and many other red states where it's actually the Republicans that are leading the charge to repeal the death penalty. And when you look around, in all the different states right now, and you're seeing all of these botched executions because states are they're buying untested drugs from secret sources. There's a real reason to want to repeal the death penalty, because apparently, you know, for the longest time I thought at least there's one thing the government can do, it's kill people. Apparently they can't even do that correctly. And they're not exercising transparency in government, because they're making it a secret where they're buying these drugs to cause death. And that bothers conservatives, that bothers libertarians, and bothers liberals. So this is an issue that can bring everybody together, and I think there's something beautiful in that message.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, bipartisanship for stopping doing something bad, that's nice for a change too. I don't celebrate bipartisanship for its own sake, but a consensus that, hey, it's time to go ahead and roll this back. And I'm sorry, this is kind of a distraction and a side note, but I have to ask, if you know the answer to the question, what's the mystery about killing someone? Why don't they just give them, you know, a whole drip bag full of morphine and just, you know, guaranteed way overdose of opiates? Isn't that make the most sense? That way, you know, at least feels a little bit nice on the way out. It's not like torturing them to death exactly, but you're guaranteed to stop their heart at some point with a morphine drip, right? Or not?
Well,
I don't understand.
Department of Corrections, I mean, they work with doctors to try to find ways that they view to be the most humane ways of killing someone, if there is such a thing. So they've found that certain drug combinations do the best at that, supposedly. And now that they can no longer get those combinations, now you're seeing different states get creative in the ways that they're trying to kill people. New drugs that they've never used before. And we're seeing the fruits of their creativity right now, and it's disgusting.
Oh, it is. It's just absolutely horrible. And by the way, I'm sorry, could you mention the two? There are two very recent bad cases, right? Could you describe those for us really briefly?
Well, you can look at what happened to Clayton Lockett in Oklahoma, where they tried to execute him, and after he didn't die, after about 45 minutes, they removed the IV. And then about an hour later, he had a heart attack and died because of partially what the drugs caused him on him. And then there was an execution in Arizona, which took a couple hours, and he made a lot of noises. Supposedly, they described it as he moved around like a fish at one point and made a lot of noises. Then there was another man in Oklahoma who was screaming out that my whole body is burning. This is not how the death penalty drugs are supposed to operate, but it's how they are operating. And this is having an effect not on just people that hear about this, but actually the Department of Corrections employees. This is having a major effect on them to see this firsthand, especially after many of them have started to create friendships with these individuals.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, yeah, because back to the decades on death row, they know them well. They all seen the Green Mile and everything. All right, well, now, so I'm sorry, because I've taken too much of your time up, and I want to give you some at the end of the interview here to talk about all the great progress that is in your recent press release here. It sounds like you guys are really doing some good.
Well, we've been all over. I've been staying quite busy, which is a good thing, but we've been to places that many probably didn't think that we belong. We went to the Faith and Freedom Coalition's Road to Majority Conference with Ralph Reed, who used to head up the Christian Coalition. And I was a little nervous as I went in, but we exhibited there, and I only talked to one person who opposed what we were doing. Everybody else was completely supportive. And we returned to CPAC as well. And, you know, it was another great experience there. And I also spoke at the Young Americans for Liberty Conference. And, you know, those guys are great. We formed a strategic partnership with them. And if there's one group that understands why we should be skeptical of government power, I would have to say it's the younger demographic, and especially Young Americans for Liberty. And they've just been fantastic. Mm.
Yeah, no, that's really great to hear. Well, listen, I really appreciate all your efforts and, you know, building consensus on this issue. It's really important, especially coming from the right. I hope you can get, you know, as many Protestant ministers and even, you know, religious organizations and Catholics too, whatever you can do, whoever you can get on board for this thing, and really come from this from the right as hard as you can all the time, and don't let up. And it's really, I know it's making a difference, you know. It's certainly changing the entire narrative around here that, well, only a hippie's against the death penalty, and all grown men who are serious and know what must be done around here support it. That's the kind of narrative that they use to get us into wars, too. And it's a lie. It's not true. And, you know, you're proving that fact, Mark.
Well, we're trying to end that fiction that's out there that says all conservatives support the death penalty, because they absolutely don't. So I thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great. And then it's conservativesconcerned.org, and people can go there, conservativesconcerned.org, and find all the recent, all the contact information and how to participate too there, right?
Yes, sir. And if they want to send me an email directly, info@conservativesconcerned.org, and I'd be happy to chat with them.
Okay, great. Well, thanks very much again for your time, Mark. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, y'all. That's Mark Hyden. He's at Conservatives Concerned about the death penalty. And they're doing some really great work over there. I hope you'll look them up again at conservativesconcerned.org. And again, he said his email address there is info@conservativesconcerned.org. You know, this is what Ron Paul said. Yeah, I'm a flip-flopper. This is the one issue I can think of where I've really changed my mind. I no longer support the death penalty. I just can't trust the government to do it right. And look how unfair it is on a racial basis, too, to minorities and the poor and whatever. It's just not fair. It ain't right. We got to stop it. He's right about that. You know he is. All right. See you in a minute. Hey, all, Scott here for Liberty.me, the brand new social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features nightly classes, guides, events, publishing, and so much more. Sign up now and you get the first 30 days free. And if you click through the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org or use the promo code Scott when you sign up, you'll save $5 per month for life. That's more than a third off the regular price. And hey, once you sign up, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. I do have a small stack of silver coins here that are going out in the mail today to a few donors. Thank you guys very much for donating and helping support the show. Anybody donates more than $100, you get a commodity disc. Make sure to include your mailing address. And I really think these things are cool, man. And, you know, Arlo sent me a thing today about how we got to work together. Oh, I don't want to spoil it. Arlo rules, man. He's the guy who made these up, and he's going to keep doing it, and they're going to be even better. And so here's the thing. Right now, there's a QR code on the back. You scan it with your phone, and blam, it tells you the instant spot price. CommodityDiscs.com. And so, you know, everything's denominated in paper dollars, not in silver. So you want to know when you're trading, that's just how it is in this economy. So when you're trading silver, I mean, hell, you can put whatever value on it you want if you want to, but I'm just saying, if you want to know what it's worth on the market, you can find out what it's worth on the market in real time. It'll tell you exactly how much it's worth. It's the wave of the future, man. Who needs government money when we could all have silver coins that tell you exactly how much they're worth in ratio to whatever else you want at all times? For free. I mean, the information part. It rules. CommodityDiscs.com. I'm putting some in the mail. I believe in Arlo's vision for commodity discs. I think commodity discs should replace all other currencies on the planet. Bitcoins will be denominated in commodity discs. It's just 1 ounce of 0.99999% fine silver there. Well, 99.9999, you know what I mean. And it tells you how much it's worth in real time, from moment to moment, as you trade with it. Isn't that cool? So, donate $100 to me, and you get one of those as a kickback, as your special gift, in place of, you know, a tote bag. You get a commodity disc. ScottHorton.org/donate. All right. Hey, I think that's really cool. And you know what? I need to be better about picking on conservatives. I just get so mad at the Sean Hannity narrative of the world. It's so stupid. And I believe me, liberals, I just don't pick on liberals as bad, but I should. They deserve it just as bad, you know. Especially now with Democrats in power. But there's that certain special ignorance that just always knee-jerks in favor, even of the cops. You know, I know liberals think that all society would just lay down dead if it wasn't here for government to protect us from the top hat-wearing robber barons or whatever fantasy world they live in or whatever. But conservatives, they love the cops, right? not the structures and institutions of society, blah, 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 like the whatever crap liberals believe in, but the cops themselves. Yeah, the more skulls they crack, the more I like them. The less power you have, the more you deserved to, the more you deserve to have your skull cracked open. I just kind of resent that, you know? But it's true that there are other parts of conservatism that are worth appealing to. Like, hey man, do you really think that Jesus would vote Republican and hardcore law and order, pro-death penalty? Do you really believe in him, or you just go for social reasons on Sunday, for business reasons? Because if you really worship Jesus, the guy that did the Sermon on the Mount and all that, I don't know if he directly ever commented on executions for crimes, but seems like he probably would have been against hiring a bunch of, what, state troopers and their contractors to kill people? You know, basically that's what we're talking about, right? Your local Department of Public Safety is, you know, it's equivalent. The Prison Bureau, which of course has got to be worse than virtually all other bureaucracies because they only, or mostly, they only interact with themselves and each other, other state apparatuses, and their prisoners. And the prisoners' families who don't have much of a say. But the public is largely removed, so they're not accountable to the public really at all. They can get away with blue bloody murder and those things for decades on end, and no one will stop them. So you're going to hire those guys to be in charge of killing people? You're going to hire this judge who's fallen asleep and that one who's never seen a black guy in his life that he could stand? You're going to let them decide who did it and who didn't? You're going to let 12 idiots on some jury decide? Now, I was thinking of this the other day. Did you see the video I posted on my Twitter feed for you? I mentioned it on the show. Call the Cops by Rob something. Well, put in Rob with it. Call the Cops and Rob and go look at Google videos. It's there. But one of the clips they showed there was of the bum that got beaten to death in Southern California by the cops. I think in L.A. It could have been in San Diego. And the only reason that, well, I mean, it's the pictures of what they did to him were just so horrible. But also his father was a cop. So that made him, you know, like a demigod, right? Like half a god who's all of a sudden his life is worth respect when put up against the lives of other cops. And of course, he hadn't attacked them or done anything. They just beat him to death for the savage fun of it. You can watch the video. It's horrible. And listen to him cry, "Daddy, they're killing me," as he dies. But anyway, because his father was a cop, they actually got charged and prosecuted. And you can watch the video. They're just guilty of second-degree murder. It's as simple as that. I mean, I don't think anybody proved that they left the house that day saying, "Come on, let's go out and kill somebody." But they certainly decided they were going to beat this guy to death and beat him to death. And the jury let him go. The same jury that would put you under the prison forever for jaywalking. Well, let the cops go when they're as guilty as they can possibly be. This is how the game is. And, you know, as old Raleigh James used to say, hey, the only people serving on your jury were the ones who were too stupid to figure out how to get out of jury duty in the first place. The people who had nothing better to do with their life than go sit on a jury. You don't want those people deciding. You can't trust those people to decide. You'd be scared as hell if they ever charged you with some kind of crazy thing you gotta go in front of a jury for, whether you did it or not. You gonna count on 12 either way? Boy, it's like flipping a coin, man. It's crazy. I mean, it's better. I'm not saying just let the judge decide by himself instead, necessarily, or anything, but I'm just saying, you know, let these people decide whether someone should be sentenced to death or not. But then, you know, I come up to the same problem that you do, too. But, Scott, what about when it's beyond a shadow of a doubt? What about when there's video, and there's DNA, and there's eyeball witnesses, and he admitted it, and everybody knows the guy did it, man? It's really not in question he did it, and the thing that he did was so horrible that we all would like to kill him. What about then? I admit I have the same problem. But I think if you actually define in the law, okay, okay, for death penalty then, not just beyond a reasonable doubt, beyond a shadow of a doubt, dude, as a legal standard, beyond a shadow of a doubt. That still is meaningless. It still just means, if you want to kill him, go ahead. If you think he did it. And plus, to be on a death penalty case jury, you got to be able to say, yeah, I'm for the death penalty. Yeah, I'm willing to sentence this guy to death if he did it. Which means you're the kind of person who's already biased toward what the state would have you think anyway. The state that's running the prosecution. So even the trials that are death penalty trials to determine guilt, never mind the sentence, are always all skewed, all out of whack anyway. And we are just talking about a government program. Why should it work right? You know, there's a great thing at FPIF about arming the Syrian rebels. And how they did arm the Syrian rebels. And they didn't, I'm not saying they didn't like exonerating them, but their focus was not, yes, let's arm up ISIS and Nusra. That ended up kind of happening anyway. It's one big arms market. And the extremists do most of the fighting, whatever. But where they had tried to set up moderate governments, where it was just another government program. They were all Potemkin villages, and they all fell to ISIS, with the breath of the big bad wolf. That was it. It didn't work. Same thing. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about Commodity Discs from CommodityDiscs.com. They're one-ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the backside. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity Discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code Commodity Disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one free. That's CommodityDiscs.com. All right, you guys. So listen, the war's back on in the Gaza Strip. I don't really know how bad it is. Truce talks collapse as rocket fire. Gaza strikes resume. Prime Minister orders delegation in Cairo to return to Israel. Talks off for now, in other words. Rockets explode in Israel south, causing no casualties. That's from Haaretz. I don't know, let me check antiwar.com and refresh the page. Maybe they got new Gaza here. Yeah, that's the best we got. Well, good luck, Gazans. You're going to need it, man. I don't know what to tell you, dude. That would suck to be in a canned hunt. You ever see that movie where old from the Buddy Holly movie is chasing Ice-T around in a canned hunt and they're just trying to kill him? Chat room guys, help me out here. Gary Busey, the crazy guy. Yeah, and he's chasing Ice-T around. You ever see that, the canned hunt? Why, that's like the war in Gaza, with Gary Busey as Israel and Ice-T as the Gazans. Only, actually in this, Gary Busey is safe on the outside of the fence. And he's just sniping and bombing and attacking Ice-T from safety, without putting himself at risk at all, in a real hunt at all. So I guess it's actually a bad analogy. Well, but it's canned, you know, it's confined. It's horrible. It's just horrible. I don't know what to tell you. The fact that Israel has banned Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch from going into the Gaza Strip ought to tell you everything you need to know. And if you didn't already think so, maybe you need to ask yourself whether actually you really were right about this all along. What would you say if Hamas wouldn't let in Amnesty and Human Rights Watch? See about their war crimes. It's possible that the guys you like are doing the wrong thing. Think very deeply about whether that is even possible in time and space in this universe where we're all stuck. Could it be that the guys I like actually are doing the wrong thing? No, go team, kill them all. Why, the Palestinians have Israel under siege. Admitted, John Kerry. right-wingers? Even John Kerry admits that poor little Israel is besieged by the Gaza Strip. they claim. And you know what? That is great propaganda for people who don't know anything about it. And you know what? It might just be enough if you could convince people of it that they'll be immune from learning any better for the rest of their life, I guess. When will the horrible Palestinian occupation of Israel ever end, poor little Israel, besieged at all times by the Palestinians, the narrative goes. Boy, I guess it really can go on like this for a long, long time. As long as Americans can keep believing this crap. So yeah, again, for a long, long time. And, you know, it fits into the narrative that, yeah, but everyone else in the world says that there's a problem here. Maybe we should reconsider what's going on for a minute and our position. But no, to Americans, just like Israelis, no, that just proves how right we are. Well, the whole world is a dark, evil, scary place full of communists and barbarians and natives and scary Muslims and God knows what. Isn't that what they say? That Israel's our Fort Apache out there on the eastern front line against savagery and all that kind of thing. So if the whole world thinks that Israel's in the wrong, it certainly proves to the Israelis that they're right. And a lot of times that goes for the Americans too. Never asking themselves, well, okay, so what exactly is the substance of their argument? Let's hear it. You know, let's have a little bit of that. As one tweeter asked me, oh yeah, well, what exactly do you mean by ending the occupation? And I said, well, you know, pull the troops out, end the checkpoints, allow freedom of movement, allow them to have their own police forces and their own state army and their own independent government and taxation authority, a separate state, and end the siege, allow them to trade, allow them to fish, open the borders. I mean, what do you mean? What do you mean? What does the occupation mean? What does it mean to end it? In fact, that's really the thing. What does it mean to end it? What he's really asking is, what occupation? He didn't know there was an occupation. Occupation? So that was how he was like tricking me into teaching him what the occupation was to describe it in the negative. Lifting it would mean the Gazans would heretofore be allowed to trade with others. Get it? They're not allowed to now. Okay. Now we're catching on about who's got who under siege. Who's occupying who. Who's threatening who. These bottle rockets they shoot over the wall might as well be just rocks. That's all they are. They're grown-up rocks, but they're the best they can do. But, you know, the analogy really is perfect to the closest one for me is Nelson Rockefeller and the Attica prison. Talk about safe outside the walls. He didn't even come to town. He just said, go in there and kill him during the Attica prison riot. And they just had him in their canned hunt. And all they were asking for was the slightest bit of ability to get along in there. They weren't all saying, you know, get me a helicopter and $1 million and get me out of here. They were saying, please give us a method to redress the endless tortures we suffer in here. Convicted felons in prison, maybe, but not less than animals. So they rioted and they took some hostages and then Nelson Rockefeller just massacred them all. That's who Benjamin Netanyahu is. He's Nelson Rockefeller, the mass murderer. Slaying people in a canned hunt. And, of course, the difference between the prisoners of Gaza and the prisoners of Attica is the prisoners of Gaza have never been convicted of anything. The prisoners of Gaza are half children. They're not criminals at all. The people of Gaza, they're mostly refugees from the land that Israel is occupying on the outside of the wall, firing all those rockets in. 80% of them are refugees, and the sons and grandsons and daughters are refugees. So anyway, I don't know what to tell you, man. What's the bottom line? The bottom line is, no, the Israelis aren't the victims here. The Israelis are the 1,000-foot-tall, massive Goliath. The unstoppable juggernaut. And the Palestinians are their pathetic, helpless victims. And I'm sorry, I don't mean pathetic in like I despise them way. I mean they're absolutely helpless on their knees in the rubble. living the most desperate of lives under the absolutely unmatched violent power of the Israeli state. If you think it's any different than that, it's because you just don't know what you're talking about. All your conservative leaders, they're happy to have you believe anything. You know that. Come on. How many of their narratives have ended up falling apart before too long? Well, this is one of them. Go look at a map and go see whether Gaza is besieging Israel or Israel is besieging Gaza. There's pretty much no way to ignore your own lying eyes, you know? That was an article we ran over the weekend at antiwar.com. Gaza from a Marxist point of view. But wait, not Karl Marx, not Karl Marx, the communist. The Marx brothers. I forget which Marx brother it was. So who are you going to believe? Me or your own lying eyes? And you're supposed to believe him. I wasn't with some girl. You didn't see me out there with some girl. What are you talking about? I'm telling you, it wasn't me. What else do you need to know? That's about how obvious it is if you're willing to actually take an honest look at it. You know? Anyway. So it's on. More people are dying right now. I don't know how many. But they're being killed right this moment. And also, America and Syria are bombing the Islamic State together again. De facto only. George Bush, of course, used to pay Syria to torture and kill jihadis for him. Obama then hired all the jihadis to try to overthrow the government of Syria because that's what Israel wanted, and he's a traitor to America. And so now ISIS is IS and a bit too big for their britches. Shorter acronym, bigger state. And so America's back on the side of Iran and the Dawa Party and the Syrian Baath Party and the Shiite Kurdish Alliance again. And more bad news like that the rest of this week. Thanks for listening, y'all. See you tomorrow.